So let me restart the meeting. I'm Keith, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Sobriety day is the 22nd of May 2000. So next month, it's 24, 24 years. Let me tell you, they've flown by, right? Ooh, you know what? Before I start, when I was a young lad, when I was 12, 13, I couldn't wait to be 20, right? Then when I was 20, I couldn't wait to be 25 and the insurance would go down and life would get a bit easier. Now I'm 63. I'm thinking, where did they go? I wish I was only 1 year sober, not 24. But anyway, another story. So look, welcome to everyone, and that's it. Let's start on how it works. So big book, pen, and a highlighter. Now, how it works: the whole of page 58 is filled with warnings. So on the top of the page, you can write warning, because this is what happens if we don't do it, and people that are not ready to take the program. And the book was written for the real alcoholic. The one that's powerless, that we spoke about earlier, the one that cannot stop drinking. So, on how it works, I'll put on the top of the page a warning because it's going to give us a warning to why we should and shouldn't do it. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail, and underline this, who's thoroughly followed our path. Because remember, half measures of our stuff. We're going to read that in a second, right? We stood at a turning point. We can't do half the job. You have to pray. You have to read the book. You have to reach out. You have to work with other people. We have to attend meetings. There's a list of things we have to do. So when you come to me for sponsorship, these are the conditions that we're going to work by. We're going to link up once a week. And we're going to go to meetings. And you've got to be willing to go to any of you. You have to reach out. Reaching out is one of our big defects that we don't want to do because we don't want to bother people. Important, as I said to Amber, we need to reach out and ask for help. It's not a form of weakness, it's a form of strength because we need that support, right? Follow that by those who do not recover, and underline this, are people that cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. It's simple. You have to give it all. We spoke in step two about that willingness to believe. If you're not willing, you won't get it. Welcome, Lisa. Page 58. Simple program. Usually, men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves, underline it. Because on your sobriety chip on the back of it, it says, to thine own self be true. Honesty starts from within. I need to be honest with me, and I can be honest with you and God and another person. If I can't be honest, it's not going to work. They're such unfortunates. They are not a fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable, and I underline this, of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Right? Rigorous. No half measures. Hermione, hello. No half measures. You can't cut no corners. You can't live in denial. You can't bullshit a bullshitter. We all told lies. We know when you're going to lie, right? The chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. People have anxiety, fear, depression. People have a bit of bipolar, ADHD. We have different disorders. Doesn't mean we're alcoholic. It doesn't make us alcoholic. We all have different ailments in life. What we're going to do in this book is we're going to recover from the condition that's going to keep us drinking, and to drink is to die. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be, and underline it, honest. Because twice we've mentioned honesty so far. Our story is disclosed in a general way. This is when we share what you used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. That's the general share in a meeting. If you're going to do a lead or a chair in a meeting, what it was like when drinking, what happened while going through the program, and what it's like now, recovered, finding the power, living that life, that freedom, that bondage from self, right? The free topics. If you have decided what we want and you're willing to go to any length to get it, underline it. Because people say, what's any length? I would go to any lengths to get my drink. Rain, snow, it wouldn't matter. I would beg, steal, and borrow to get what I wanted. And I didn't need to put that willingness into getting sober. Then you're ready to take certain steps. Some of these we balked or skipped. We thought we could find, to underline this, an easier, softer way. But we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, and underline this, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Because we know what you've got to come. Half measures. It's warned us all the way along. Half measures. The cannots and will nots, right? Fearless and thorough from the very start, some of us have tried to hold on to old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go. I underline this absolutely, not partially, not maybe, not bought. Remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. I'm going to reiterate that. It says, remember, you deal with something you can't remember. Remember, because people will say, why do you take that drink, Keith? Why do you get drunk? I don't know. Remember, you deal with something you can't remember. Remember. Okay. Without help is too much for us. But there is one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And I underline his next five words. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at a turning point. And a turning point is going to be the decision in 3. We asked his protection and care with, and underline this again and highlight it, complete abandon. Because we went through, we agnostics, and we were willing to be open-minded. We were willing to believe that there's something. Now we're going to abandon ourselves to the God idea, when we abandoned the God idea years ago, because I never believed in God. But suddenly getting sober, I need to abandon that idea, lay aside my prejudices, and start to believe in a power I never believed in. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. People throw this suggested program of recovery up all the time. Well, they're suggested them steps. We say, we suggest you take the program or you don't. To drink is to die. We have a way out, which we can absolutely agree. So we suggest you take the program, take the 12 steps and recover. If not, you're going to drink and die. Step 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives become unmanageable. The M dash in there of alcohol means as a result of. My unmanageability is a result of me continually drinking. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step 2. And the result of step 2 is 12. So next to step 2, I wrote 12. Because 12 is the result of the willingness to be restored to sanity. So next to 2, I wrote 12. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Underline this as we understood him. And next to that, I wrote 11. Because I handed my will and life over in 3. And in 11, I sought through prayer and meditation to improve that conscious contact. So 11 is the result of 3. 12 is the result of 2 steps, okay? Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human beings, the exact nature of our wrongs. When we do our step 5, we're going to go through this next week. We're going to see where we were at fault. See where we were wrong. Empathize. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, not some of them. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all persons we had harmed, became under our list, willing to make amends to them all, not some. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so, would injure them or others. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it in 10. 11, sought through prayer and meditation. To sort is to seek. And we seek through prayer and meditation. There's a prayer in every step we go through. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Praying only for, underline that, only for his the knowledge of his will and a power to carry that out, not how we see it, right? 12, had a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It says, many of us are saying, what an order, I can't go through with it. The cannots and will nots. The half measures, this refers back to page 58, right? Half measures avail us nothing. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. And I underlined this, we are not saints. We're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. And I underlined and highlighted this next 3 lines. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. We're not perfect at what we do. We're not always going to get it right. But providing the will is in the right way and the will is God's will, and you're willing to grow and willing to learn. And step 10 tells us about growing in understanding and effectiveness. Doesn't matter about mistakes. Tells us, right? Our description of the alcoholic, which was Bill's story, more about alcoholism, there's a solution. The chapter to the agnostic and our personal adventures before and after make clear and underline is three pertinent ideas, three important ideas. A is step one, that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Step one. Step two is B and C, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And then C was God could and would, and underline this, if he was sought. And next to that, then three, I wrote page 58, because it gave us the warnings. If he was sought. If in the big book is everywhere, it's a get out clause. Okay. It told us half measures avail us nothing. And he said, God could and would, if he was sought, that we don't balk at stuff. Underline this, two words, being convinced. That means you know you've got a problem. We know there's a solution, a way out. And now we're being convinced. It now says we were at step three. Now we're going to make a decision. These next two pages are going to explain what life is like on my will or our will, and then God's will. So there'll be certain things we're going to highlight as we go through. Underline this, these next two words, these next two sentences. It says the first requirement is a direction, right? In step three. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. Now we're going to talk about running on self-will. It says, on that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. This is when I'm running the show. This is when I'm in control, when I'm running on self-will, before I got sober. Most people live by self-propulsion, underline it, because I know best. Self-propulsion. Each person is like the actor that wants to run the whole show. That's me. I'm not even the director or the boss, but I want to be in charge. I know what's best for Jackson, for Barb, and for Sarah, and for Valerie, and Richard, and William. I know what's best for everybody. If you only do as I tell you, the show will be great, right? It's forever to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. Underline this word, if. If his arrangements would only stay put. If only people would do as he wished, the show will be great. Everybody, including Keith, will be pleased. Life will be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, Keith, our actor, may be sometimes quite virtuous. Keith may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Or on the other hand, Keith may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. And that's me. And if we put anybody's name into that in the group, we'd probably all fit that bill, right? Because we've got them varied traits. But with most humans, it's more likely to have varied traits. This is not alcoholism. These are human traits, underlined it. Humans, it's more like a varied human traits. Next out, I wrote human traits. Because that doesn't make me alcoholic. My self-imposed crisis doesn't make me alcoholic. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off too well. Phil begins to think life doesn't treat him right. Phil decides to exert himself more. Phil becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit Phil. Admitting Phil may be somewhat at fault, Phil is sure that other people are more to blame. Phil becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really, I underline this, a self-seeker? Because I want to be the boss. I want to be important. I want to be in charge. Even when trying to be kind. And I underlined this next sentence down to manage as well. It says, is he not the victim of the delusion, the lie, that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? If you all listen to what I say and do what I do, life will be great. Because I believe that. I can wrest satisfaction. I can make it all good. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things that he wants? And do not Keith's actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can out of the show? Is Keith not, even in his best moments, and underline this, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Because I'm going to boss you around. I'm going to bitch you and get you, bully you, and make you do what I think is best. I want to be in control. I'm going to blame when it goes wrong. I'm going to wrest satisfaction. I'm going to make it all good in Keith's eyes. Our actor is self-centered, underlined it, and egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining about the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the 20th century politicians and reformers are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him. All these people are blaming everybody else but themselves, right? And the alcoholic who is all locked up. Whatever our protestations now highlighted from here, I've done the whole page to be fair. Just highlight the whole page, right? An underlined self. Every time you see self on this page, underline it. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? Selfishness and self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles. Self again, right? Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they return. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that sometime in the past we've made decisions based on self, which has later put us in a position to be hurt. This is all about me. Me, right? Self. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot. That means I can't get enough of it. I'm an extreme example. I'm going to blame the world. It's never my fault. I'm always right. I'm over than, I'm bigger than, I'm better than. I'm an extreme example. Normal people ain't like that. They don't give a shit. I have to be right. I'm never wrong. I'm going to blame Lisa and Sandra and Hermione. It's never my fault, right? They rise out of ourselves and exactly. Alcohol is an extreme example of self will run right, though he doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics and underlings must be rid of this selfness. We must, or it kills us. Underline that. We must get rid of it. We must change, or we're going to die because we're going to drink. And underline this and highlight it. God makes that possible. And there is no way of getting rid of, entirely rid of self without his aid. Many of us have had moral and philosophical convictions galore. We've won sometimes. But we could not live up to them even though we'd have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness again. Much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. That page is all about how I run the show. How my life is an extreme example. Never wrong. It's going to change the tone now. We're going to change this to underline we, right? He says, this is the how and why of it. Underline this because there's step three directions. First of all, we had to quit playing God, it didn't work. What I've just read out is what my life is like on self-will. I want to run the show. It's never my fault. I'm an extreme example. When I've got God's help, this is how my life is going to be from now on. Next, we decided in this hereafter drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal and we are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple and his concept was the keystone. Underline it. The keystone. The keystone in construction is what holds it all together. Jax will tell you that. The keystone, right? Of the new and triumphant arts which we passed, underline this, to freedom. At the bottom of the page, I wrote foundations is number one because I'm going to give you the archway to freedom in the group. Number two is a cornerstone, the willingness to believe. Number three, step three is the keystone. So step one was the foundation, understanding the problem. Number two is the cornerstone, the willingness to believe. And number three was the keystone, This is what holds it together, which means God, the power, is going to hold it all together. Top of 63, I highlighted this underlined and highlighted this one sentence. When we sincerely took such a position, that means when I handed it over, when I finally let go of self, because page 62 was all about me. Now it's about the we and God. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. And I highlighted we on this page, because now I'm not alone. I'm not on my own. I've got a power running my life. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. What do we need to get sober? To be free from the bondage of self. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, helping other people. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. Now, if you follow that line across to page 62, right? So where you've got established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, go straight across to 62. And it tells you what you're concerned with in self-will. It says what we're concerned with is ourselves, our resentments, our self-pity, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we believe is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. That's in my world, in my will. Then on the following page 63, on the same level, it says established on such a footing, now I've got God in my life. I became less and less interested in ourselves, our plans, and design. You see the parallel? Page 62 is about how I'm an extreme example when I run the show. On the same parallel on 63, it says, you won't be like that, Keith. If you follow the directions and you invite that power into your life, you won't be interested in page 62. He said, more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Again, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear to today, the tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. They were the step three promises. Okay. If you unmute, we can do the step three prayer together. Okay, so everyone unmute, please. It says we were now at step three. Many of us said to ourselves and to the maker as we understood him, please join me. God,
I offer myself to
build with me,
do with me,
do with me
as thou wilt.
Leave me the
bondage of self,
and may
thy
will
take
away my difficulties.
Victory
over them
may
be a witness
of
thy will.
I will always.
Thank you. Just please mute yourselves. That was horrendous. Sound like a bunch of drunks, to be fair. Okay, if you're muted. Okay, I'm going to read that again. I'm going to break it down. It says, God, I offer myself to thee. Most of the prayers within the big book will always have, thy will, not mine, be done. Whatever prayer you go through, whatever part of the day you're in, always use that prayer, thy will, not mine, be done. To build with me and to do me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, which was page 62, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, my selfishness, my self-centeredness, that victory over them may bear witness to those who hold up with thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And that's the power of step three. So someone's not muted. That's it. So 62 is about a life in self-will. The bottom of 62 and the top of 63 will give us the step three promises. We have a new employer. He's going to provide what we need. And we want that peace of mind. We want that freedom from bondage of self. We want it to be recovered from alcoholism. He said we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. That we could at last underline this next five words. That we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And next to that, I wrote completely. All right? Because in step one, we admitted to our innermost self that we're alcoholic. We're committed to ourselves, but we are an alcoholic. We cannot live life. Step three says, completely and utterly, I offer myself to God, which we just did. We found it a very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person. This could be a best friend, a sponsor, such as our wife, our best friend, an underlying spiritual advisor. The big book doesn't have a sponsor written in it, but this, you know, we know what that means. But it's better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional. As long as we express the idea, voicing it without reservation, you can use any prayer, the Lord's Prayer, whatever prayer you choose, right? And underline this, but this was only a beginning. Underlined and highlighted it. Because remember back in More About Alcoholism with Jim's story, Jim made a beginning. We told him steps 1, 2, and 3. Jim went on his business trip and stopped at a roadside cafe and got drunk because he failed to enlarge his spiritual life, right? It's only a beginning. Though this honestly and humbly made an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once, I wrote First Dimension. Because the steps come in 4 parallels to the 4th dimension. So steps 1, 2, and 3 are the first dimension of existence. It says next. These are the directions for step 4. Next, we launched down a course of vigorous action. Not next month. We've took step 3. We're going to straight away run to step 4. It says this is the first step, which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Top of 64. And I highlighted this whole paragraph, to be honest. It says, though our decision, which was step 3, was vital and crucial, underlined it. It's a vital and crucial step. It could have little or permanent effect unless, and underline this, at once followed by. So when people ask you how quick do we do it, we can do it at once and next. At once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves. Remember that, page 62? Which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started on a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. If you've got a shop and you're selling loaves of bread and food and you've got a loaf of bread on the shelf, it's a week out of date, you ain't going to sell it. That's part of your inventory. It's out of date. It's out of stock. We need to get rid of that stuff that's not going to sell. It says the same thing is, it's taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. If it's out of date or damaged, we get rid of it for a business owner. Want to get rid of them promptly without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he can not fool himself about values, underline values. Because value is going to be part of your inventory, right? We did exactly the same with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced, and I highlighted this whole bottom paragraph, being convinced that self manifested in various ways, which was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. These are the manifestations. First one is resentment. People are going to talk about the spiritual malady, right? The spiritual malady is resentment, fears, harms, sex conduct. That's your spiritual diseases, right? It's going to tell us now. It says resentment is one of the manifestations. It's the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it, or from the resentment, stems all forms of spiritual disease, right? Now look at page 65. It's got Mr. Brown. It's got the cause, my column, and then on the effects, my. It's got sex relations, fears, self-esteem, security, personal relations. These are all parts of the spiritual disease, which collectively are the spiritual malady. All right? So I put them down as resentments, fear, security, sex conduct. Okay? That's your spiritual diseases. Collectively, there are sickness. Malady means sickness. We had this. So your spiritual diseases are your fears, resentments, sex conduct, self-esteem, security, personal relations. They're the spiritual malady, right? I'm going to read that again. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it, or from the resentment, which is sort of affects my column, from it forms all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, which is mind and body, which is alcoholism, we have been spiritually sick. It's the resentments and the fears. All that stuff is what's blocking God that's inside of us. When the spiritual malady is overcome, when we go through steps 4 through 9, when we read this out with our sponsor and it becomes overcome, and we see our defects and we see who we've got to make amends to, when that's overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. We recover, because these are the things we just read that are blocking us from God. He said we had to get down to causes and conditions from the things that are blocking us. The affects my column is what's blocking me from God. Okay. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, which is alcoholism. In dealing with resentments, underline this, we set them on paper. First bit of written work in AA. We don't do a written step 1 or step 2 or step 3. Some people choose to do that, and that's fine. The book doesn't need to do that. We listed people, institutions, or principles for whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. And in most cases, we found it is our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations. Underneath that, I wrote basic instincts, because this was written in an American language. In English, we have 3 basic instincts. You can write them at any top of any one page. The 3 instincts we talk about are the sex instinct, the social instinct, and the security instinct. Sex, social, security. They're the basic instincts. Everybody has them in life. But we're an extreme example. I want to have a better sex life, a better security, more money, a better job. I want to be the more social. I want to be the best, the greatest, loved by everybody. I'm an extreme example. Let me be honest, I've recovered now. I don't give a shit who likes me. If I'm being truthful, I don't care. I haven't got to be the best and the greatest. I'm not bothered about the best house, the best bird. I don't care. Because I've been restored to sanity, because I've been humbled, because all my defects got removed. My selfish self-centered got flatlined down to where it should be. And later on, we're here in step 10 and 11, we get our will back, okay? Sex, social, security, the basic instincts of life. Top of 65, including sex, we were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up, we're pissed off, we're tired, right? In our grudge list, we set opposite a name. Our injuries, was it our self-esteem, our security, ambitions, personal or sex relations which have been interfered with? Social, sex, security. I'm just going to read them out, and then we're going to see how pissed off Mr. Brown got, right? He said, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. His attention to my wife. He told my wife about my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. Now, I'd be pissed off at Mr. Brown. Let me be honest with you. What did it affect? It affected my sex relations, because now my wife's not having sex with me. She's got the ump, right? My self-esteem and fear, because I'm worried about Brown, right? Sex relations, self-esteem, fear, and security. Brown may get my job. They're the instincts, my sex, my social, and my security instincts. Now I'm pissed off with Mr. Jones. Let's talk about Mrs. Jones. She's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He was my friend. And she's a gossip. I don't like her neither. She's affected my personal relationship, my self-esteem, and fear. I'm worried about her. My employer. He's unreasonable, unjust, overbearing, threatens to fire me for drinking and padding this expense account. Of course, I'm pissed off with him as well. Self-esteem, fear, and security. Social and security instincts it affects. And then my wife. I'm pissed off at the wife. Why? Because she understands and nags. That's uncommon, isn't it? Right? She misunderstands and nags, right? Likes Brown and wants to put the house in her name. It affects my pride, my sex relations, my security and fear. Of course it's going to affect that. So when we go back onto page 64, it said our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. So when I looked at all these resentments with Brown, Jones, the employer and wife, the key thing is I was drinking. So when I look at the fourth column that we have, we write it down as our part and my part. What did I do to set the ball rolling? I was drunk. I was inconsiderate. I was dishonest. I was angry. I was selfish. So the fourth column comes in play. We've got the worksheets for this. But what did you do, Keith? What part did you play in all of this? Because you don't just get pissed off at these people for no reason. My part was I'm always drunk. And I'm inconsiderate of the wife. And I'm lying at the boss. And I'm cheating. I'm fiddling the expense account. I wouldn't do that if I was sober. But I'm an extreme example. It's never enough, right? He said, we went back through our lives and underlined this, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. You can't cut corners. Go on page 58. It gave us the warning that half measures avowed us nothing. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparently in this world and its people were often quite wrong. Of course, people are wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome of this was people continued to wrong us and underline this, and we stayed sore. I got resentment. I replayed it in my head over and over again. He said this, she said that, they did this, I should have done that, and I should have done this. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. I highlighted his next two lines, underlined. He says, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. And that's the truth. To the precise extent that would permit these things, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, who suffers a maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, and I highlighted his next five words, the business of resentment is infinitely grave. Because that's what blocks me from God. You can write blocks from God if you like, next that, or blocks, whatever you like. And I highlighted this, we found that it is fatal. I underlined it. Because if I don't do my step five, if I don't clear this up, I'm going to go back and I'm going to drink. To drink is to die. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. And I underline this, the insanity of alcohol returns. And we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. And there's your warning in step five, step four, sorry. If we were to live, we had to be free of that. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. We had to get rid of the resentments. We had to set it all on paper. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. This is your fourth column. You can write that next to that if you want. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle, underlined it. Because now we're sober, we've got a bit of empathy. We can see where we were at fault. I took a guy from step five last night. And once you see where you're at fault, you can see what you did to cause it, you're free from it. It doesn't exist because they're the things that we have to change, right? We began to see the world and its people really dominated us. In that state of wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. Underline this, how could we escape? How could we escape? We saw that these resentments had to be mastered, but how with a question mark? And page 65 gave us the answer. We put them on paper. We shared them with another person of God. We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Some people are sick, right? Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, like ourselves, they were sick too. And I underline these three words. We ask God again, right? We bring God back in. We ask God to help us show us the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully give a sick friend. When a person is offended, we say to ourselves, step four prayer, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will, not mine, be done. Step four prayer. Underline these next five words. We avoid retaliation or argument. If you're dealing with sick people, you're not going to get your way. You're not going to get through to them. Sometimes we have to walk away. We wouldn't treat a sick people that way. If we do, we destroy any chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kind and tolerant view of each, and underline this, everyone. Because you will get drawn into controversy. You will get drawn into argument. Sometimes we've got to walk away. Sometimes we've got to take the power back. It isn't about winning and being right all the time. I can take power back by going, no problem, you're right, I'll see you later, walk away. And then I take the power back. Referring to our list again, putting our minds of the wrongs of others have done. Fourth column, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. I highlight this next whole paragraph, actually, from where we resolutely down to put these matters straight. I highlight the whole lot. And put fourth column, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking and frightened? What did we do? Though a situation has not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other persons involved entirely. Where were we to blame? ? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. What did you do? When I was selfish, I was inconsiderate, I was dishonest. I'm argumentative. We placed them in black and white before us. We admitted our wrongs, and honestly, we were willing to set these matters straight. These are going to come up to be your defects. These are the ones that we're going to look at, your selfish self-centeredness, the lying, the argumentative, the biggest one for us is inconsideration. We don't care about other people. Page 62 told us that. We want to run the whole show. Never my fault. I don't care what you think or say. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, and the employer and the wife. This short word, I highlight this next sentence. This short word sometimes touches about every aspect of our lives. Fear is probably, I'm going to say, number one offender, but fear is up there with resentment. Everybody has fears. We're going to get into them in a couple of minutes. Everybody has fears. It's how we deal with them, right? It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune when we felt we didn't deserve it. And I highlight this next sentence. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Now this is our fears list. We're going to write next to this next paragraph, we're going to write fears or top of the page. Okay? Top of the page. He said, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper. In the fear inventory, has two columns. What is the fear? And why have you got it? Again, I've got the sheets up in the group for people to read. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because of self-reliance that failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And that goes back to our drinking. When I'm drinking, I'm full of fear. I don't want to piss people off and upset people. Perhaps there are a better way we think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do, we think he would have us. We humbly rely upon him. Does he now enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those people who think that spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages means that faith means courage. And I highlighted this last part, this last part of the paragraph. All men of faith have courage. Because now you're sober, you're not dishonest, and you're not lying and cheating and stealing. You will have faith and you will have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize to God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear, underlined it, because God is going to remove your fears. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he'd have us be. But once we commence to outgrow fear, what's the fear? Why have you got it? We ask God to remove it. Now about sex. Girls, it's not about pokey pokey, right? Not about who, where, when, how many times, what. It's not about that. How do we harm others, right? We're going to read. Many of us need an overhaul in here. But above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes. Absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is the lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex, sex, and more sex. Who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of our trouble, the troubles of the race, are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school will allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would give us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. That's just how other people or some people may see their sex conduct, their sex relations. Some want loads more, some don't. It's just, we don't judge people, right? We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. And what can we do about them with a question? It's going to give us the questions for the sex inventory. He said, we reviewed our own conduct. This is your inventory. Over the years past, it's going to ask you, where have you been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? And whom did we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Who was it? And what did you do? It was a wife. Did you arouse jealousy, suspicion? Yeah. Bitterness? Yeah. Inconsiderate? Yeah. All of these. I aroused all of that in the partners I had. I was at fault, right? Where was Keith at fault and what should he have done instead is the question. That's the last one. What should you have done, Keith? Well, I shouldn't have cheated and I shouldn't have been like this and I shouldn't have treated her like that. So when I look at my sex conduct, who was it? What did I do? What should I have done instead? Three columns. We got this all down on paper and we looked at it. In this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subject each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not with a question mark? Was it all about you or not? Next to that, you can write page 62 if you like, because that's what we write on page 62. I'm going to taking it's always about me. We ask God to mold our ideas and help us live up to them. We remembered that we're always given sex powers, were God-given and therefore good, never to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. We don't treat people like that today. We treat with love and respect, and we treat others how we treated ourselves. So our sex conduct is, who did we hurt? How did we harm them? Was we inconsiderate? Yeah. Okay. And what should you have done instead? And now sober, you can see when you were at fault, you were wrong. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, and I underline this next sentence, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm. We must, right? Provided that we still do not bring about more harm in doing so. In other words, we treat sex as we would treat any other problems. In meditation, and I underline these, or highlight these next three lines. We ask God another prayer. We ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if you want it. But I'm going to go back and make amends to my ex-wife. the way that I treated her, the harms that I'd caused. I asked God to direct my thinking. How do I approach it? When we get to step 9, we're going to go through the amends process of how we do each amends and when we're ready. And I highlight this next sentence. God alone can judge our sex situation. We don't care what you've done, where you've done it, who you've done it with, how many times. We're not interested. We want to know, did you treat them bad? Did you arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness, despair? Did you cause harm? That's all we want to know. And when you sit down and go, yeah, I did. I was inconsiderate. Shouldn't have been like that. We ask God to remove it. Counsel with persons is often desirable. But we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Suppose we fall short of the chosen idea and stumble, does it mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. And I highlighted the next sentence, and I underlined it. Depends on us and our motives, right? If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we'll be given and we have learned the lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, and I underline this, we are quite sure to drink. If you don't see where you were wrong, if you don't change for the program of action, then you're going to be the same person. You're going to do the same things and you're going to drink in the same way. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. To sum up about sex, we honestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves and it quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, this is a summary of your inventory. We have written down a lot. We have listed and analysed our resentments. We've begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to sense their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies. For we look at them as sick people too. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you will read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope that you are now convinced. And I highlighted the last part from God. He said, God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have made a decision in 3, an inventory in 4 of your own grosser handicaps, you've made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Okay.